Hey, welcome to the Amber May Show. I'm Amber May. I have a wonderful guest today. She's a nurse and went in to get her doctorate. So it's Dr. Chris Michaud is joining us today. We're going to talk about all things COVID. We're going to talk about her experience, what she's seen in the medical world, and then also how do you advocate for your loved one, especially when there's that distance going on and they're separated on the COVID floor and you can't get to them. But before we do, I want you always to check the description. So click the description. I've partnered with some businesses to save you money, and so it's really important. So make sure you go also. I want a big shout out. I want to support all the patriots, okay? Let's defund the swamp, let's refund the kingdom, let's help our patriot friends out. So check out JAWDD.com. That's JAWDD.com. That stands for Jaw Dropping Designs. They've been helping me get my logos and websites going, so check them out. We want to support patriots when we can. Also, a lot going on. We're going to be talking about health today, so make sure you check out Dr. Stella. She was on our program last week. It's drstellamd.com. She has these COVID bites that were specifically made to support your immune system. You got to get some of that, and you can save 5% when you use promo code Amber May, one word. Also, MyPillow.com. Hey, Christmas is coming. Those slippers are amazing. I got some slippers, not only for me, but for my husband. And you got to get those. And you could save up to 66% off with promo code Amber. So make sure you're always checking the links because I might be partnering with more people down the road. But enough about me helping to save you money. Let's talk to Dr. Chris Michaud right now. Welcome to the program. Thanks for coming on. I really
Thanks for
appreciate you
having me.
coming.
Thank you. I'm excited.
I've heard some of, we've been in the same Telegram channel and we've been talking, and some of the insights you have are just, I just had to bring you on the show because, we're just all of us lay people, not medical people, are just trying to figure out how to best protect ourselves and what we can do to help ourselves. That's why I had Dr. Peter McCullough on the show. That's why I had Dr. Stella on the show. Now I have you on the show, and I want to know, what have you been seeing, like, from beginning, like before COVID to now? Like, what are like, is there anything that's been like, why are they doing that? Or, I'm really frustrated with this. Like, anything that's come up to, with you since you've kind of seen everything start happening?
Yes. So I'll just a quick background on me. I've been a nurse for 15 years. I started at the associate degree level and then did every degree in between. So the bachelor's, the master's. My master's is in nursing education. And then I went to get my doctorate, and it's actually in executive leadership in healthcare. And that is because I didn't want to be a nurse practitioner. There was at one point one time where I thought I did, and there's a long story behind that, but so I did not do nurse practitioner. So when we say that I'm doctor, I am, but I'm not a physician or a nurse practitioner. So I do have a doctorate in nursing, nursing theory, basically. So most of my experience is in labor and delivery, which is a place where nurses have a lot of autonomy and patients are very vulnerable. So if there is any kind of patient advocate, specialist, if we could call it that, we do have patient advocate positions, but I'm saying as a nurse, if there was any that is very much having to advocate for a patient all the time, it would be a labor and delivery nurse, as well as like ICU where patients are obviously sleeping, right, or in comas or whatnot. So during COVID, I was working on my doctorate. I have a military spouse and I have a child with learning disabilities. So during COVID, my son gets sent home and they're not doing anything or they're doing this online stuff. So it really, in a way, I was thankful that I was working on my degree and I didn't have to, schlep between the degree and working and being essentially a single parent, right? But then when I got done, it was like, now, if I want to go to work, I need to get a shot. And so we can start back in the beginning of COVID, and my science brain, right, saw the quote unquote science and the articles and the things. And at first I was like, hey man, wear your mask, do whatever you need to do. I was at home, so I made masks for people, right? Because that's one of my hobbies is sewing. So But then when the data started coming out, the first thing I kind of said, the first wake up for me was, if we know to wear a mask, why do we not know if it is droplet or airborne? That was my first question. If it's, and I think the, and I don't want to quote anything because I didn't pull that up for today, but I think they said it was droplet with airborne tendencies, which is just silly, okay? So that was my first gripe, was if this is droplet, we all don't need masks, and we certainly don't need them in our house, and we really don't need them outside by ourselves. Especially
Dr. McCullough said that too, and I think another doctor, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head, Dr. Cole, he said the same thing. He's like, the virus is just so fragile. So when you're going outside, the UV rays kill it, the wind kills it, it's fragile. Okay. I think it's silly when we're wearing them outside.
To correct that thinking, a virus is actually not alive.
I have just learned about that.
So that's not to say that the virus isn't able to replicate once it gets into your cell. But remember, it's a parasite. It needs a host.
I think when he was saying that, he was trying to make sense for us non-science people.
It's kind of an odd concept to try to grasp if you don't understand. How could something that's not alive make me sick?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it can, right? So in the sunlight, the UV light kills the protection that keeps the virus, the RNA that is the eventually what replicates and makes you sick. It kills that envelope, right? That's how that dies. So not dies, because remember, it's not alive.
Right. I get what you're saying.
So that's why it makes it more vulnerable, and why once that's damaged, there's no way to get it in the body and then replicate it, right? Because it's got to get to a certain place first. So that's where I went with that. And then when I guess the vaccine, the other thing after the masks was, instead of saying, we need a therapeutic and we need it now because people are dying. And if you remember back when all of the COVID started and it was in China and you saw people like dropping dead on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember those videos? Mm-hmm. Like dead children in body bags. And these were on the mainstream. This isn't conspiracy videos.
No, we saw that. Yeah. Right.
And it was like, why are they just dropping dead? Holy cow. Like this is very, very scary. And I don't, want to leave my house.
Mm-hmm.
But then none of that was happening here. And you had to go, well, it's China. Let's talk about their propaganda cycle, right? So the next thing for me that was another what is going on with healthcare is they never said how to treat it, or they never even said, what can we do to make it a little less robust, right? Mm-hmm. How do we, vitamin C, vitamin D, and before they wouldn't have said NAC, and we can talk about NAC later, but there was nothing. It was wash your hands, wear your mask, stay away from people, stay in, 2 weeks to slow the spread or whatever the propaganda was. That's not going to keep you from this, okay? What's going to keep you from this is your immune system, your own immune system. And if you're locked up in your house and you're not going out in the sun and keeping your vitamin D levels up, and you're not eating appropriately because you're not going to the grocery store for fresh stuff and you're eating frozen pizza or whatever it may be, that's what's going to make you vulnerable. Okay. So that was my next thing. Why are we pushing? Why is Bill Gates on the TV talking about a vaccine when we could talk about treatments and therapies? What
I had the same question. What does a computer guy know about the human body? And then I found out, I didn't know this before, but I found out he is in the pharmaceutical game. Like, he is big on vaccines and manufacturing vaccines, and his money's invested in that. And I'm like, and he's out there like authority figure on medicine. I'm like, what medical degree do you have, sir? That was like one of my like light bulb moments. I'm like, what the heck is he doing in front of the TV?
Money. That's what he's doing in front of the TV.
Mm-mm-mm.
And if you look into his sound bites from many years back, because he's been in the game a long time, he's been in the game with GMOs to in our foods to increase production. And really there isn't, I think there might be a rice that is GMO that actually produces more, but most GMOs that we're eating or whatever, whether you buy into GMOs being good, bad, or indifferent, it doesn't matter. The point is the whole point of GMO was to make a hardier crop that doesn't die during drought or can handle more water or produces more. Mm-hmm. That was the whole point of GMO. And that's not what we're getting from GMO. And we continue to do this GMO thing, which turns into patents, which turns into more money, which, you know, that first patent on a live organism was the beginning of a very slippery slope. And we can talk, that's a whole nother story, a whole nother show, being able to patent a plant. That's a whole nother show. But
because it should be illegal unless... So, because plants are supposed to be found in nature, and as far as I understand about patents, if it's found in nature, you can't patent it.
Exactly.
So
what they did was inserted different genes and made the plant distinct and not able to be in nature, and that's how they ended up getting that patent. The flip side of that is they can be in nature, and once they are introduced into nature, they spread.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They don't need a scientist who bought into that GMO or into that patent in order to grow. So these GMO seeds end up on other farmers' plots, and then those farmers get sued. This has been a long, long,
long
thing. It's been for a long time, and it's a little off topic. But the point is, Bill Gates has been in the game for a long time as a quote unquote humanitarian. He wants to save the world, feed the world, vaccinate the world. And yet there are countries that will not allow him and his business. So that's probably a whole nother show to talk about.
But I mean, they all tie in together to get the big picture. I mean, all this kind of ties in together because you're absolutely right. He is banned, and some of his vaccines are banned because it sterilized girls. It caused a lot of problems with women. And so they're not allowed in those countries. And that was good on their behalf to ban Bill Gates.
Right.
Going back to Bill Gates, there's also quotes. I don't know if you were going to go with that.
About depopulation.
Yeah.
About our population being too large and having to do something about that. And again, that's feeds into his GMO plot, right? So when he's talking about GMOs and we need to increase the production of food, he's talking because we have too many people on the planet, right? And so that's how you get to GMO stuff and keep the fear down about GMOs, but also continue your plan. So when his face came out, of course, I was like, oh, here we go with him, because I'm not a fan of him. I've never been a fan of him, and I've never been a fan of GMOs. So in the food. So and for some reason, that's still considered a conspiracy theory that GMOs exist. I don't even know why that should be a conspiracy theory at all. Maybe the conspiracy theory is that it changes our DNA. That is. But as far as them existing is not, definitely not a conspiracy theory, right? So that was my other wake up moment was, we're not even talking about therapeutics. We're not, you know, why aren't we trying things that we use for flu, since we know this is a coronavirus, right? Why aren't we using what we would do to ease all the other coronaviruses? What about the antivirals we use for the flu, right? I don't know if you've ever experienced it. A lot of people, I think they're kind of expensive and they're not used. They're not that great. But if there's a flu outbreak in, say, a doctor's office, you know, somebody gets sick, tests positive for the flu, everybody in the doctor's office has, you know, the option to take an antiviral to help not get the flu. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So these have been around for a long time. I can't quote the price, but they were not cheap, but you could get them if you wanted to prevent getting the flu, knowing that you've been
exposed
to it.
Right? Yeah.
So why weren't we talking about that? Why weren't we? So then another thing that came out said that people who have low vitamin D levels seem to be getting sicker. And it said, of all the patients that are hospitalized, meaning they just couldn't take it anymore and they had to be hospitalized for treatment, for breathing, for whatever, every single one of them has a low vitamin D. So, of course, I was, at the time I was living in Hawaii, and I didn't obviously have vitamin D problems. I've never had personally, but there is a certain threshold that you can take of vitamin D because it's a fat soluble vitamin. You don't want to take a lot. It's not something you're just going to chug, right? And we can talk about fat soluble versus non-fat soluble, but you can take quite a bit of it and be very safe. So even if you don't know your vitamin D level, you can take a daily vitamin D of 2000 international units and be completely fine. Okay. I think the threshold, I won't tell you because then somebody will say, I'm going to take the maximum, but it's very, very high, much higher than 2000 before it builds up and can cause you major problems in your body. Mm-hmm. So that was the first thing I did was, well, my whole family is getting vitamin D, even though I live in Hawaii and we get plenty of sunshine.
Well, like you, I saw this Dr. Cole video and I had no idea about the vitamin D and what it does to the body. And so once I saw him and he said, we're in a vitamin D deficiency. That is why every winter we're in a vitamin D deficiency. And that's why people get sick. So if we could just take vitamin D, then people will not be as sick. And so I was like you, I'm like, well, shoot, I could just go to the pharmacy. I'll just get my vitamin D, and I've been doing it ever since. Right. And I make sure my kids have vitamin D in their multivitamin because I want them to be able, because they don't swallow pills yet. So I want to make sure they're getting it too. And like you, I mean, we could get sunshine in our state. However, just as a precaution, why not take a vitamin?
Right. Right. If the worst thing is you have expensive pee.
There you go.
That's what I tell people. You know, that's really the worst that can happen is that your urine is really expensive, whatever. If you have the money to be able to do it, then you should, right? It's what there's no harm in that. The other thing, so I just want to be clear with you. I don't subscribe to a lot of videos, a lot of blogs, a lot of whatever. I read the science that's being put out. So if the Wall Street Journal says, such and such, blah, blah, blah. They just had one the other day saying, this is something I haven't really fully finished getting into, but people who got the Janssen or the Johnson & Johnson vector vaccine need to be boosted or would have better efficacy if they are boosted with the mRNA vaccine. And I said, wow, that must have been a serious study because that's what my brain does. That's what my education was for, is being able to read a study, know the weakness in the study setup, and be able to read the discussion at the end or the results and know whether or not they've misrepresented it, right? It's been misrepresented. I can get into that when I'm done looking at it, but with the vitamin D, that's how I found out about that. Right. It's not that I follow bloggers or whatever. It's that I read the science. Okay. So that only makes sense. Which population is having the worst time with COVID racially? Black people. Okay. Black people are having the worst time with COVID. And this isn't just a talking point. It isn't just a way to create something racial. It's because the African-American population is chronically low on vitamin D, chronically. And that is because the melanin in their skin.
Dr. Stella said the exact same thing on my previous show. So you just, I mean, you guys are just like backing each other up with, because like you're right on the money. And I'm glad my listeners will know, like what you're saying is true. Here's another medical professional, a doctor, who's also happened to be African-American, said the exact same thing. Right. Sorry. Continue.
Right. So even if you didn't have the study, if you didn't even have the study saying that the vitamin D levels are low in those that are being hospitalized, you can really figure that out just by which populations are most vulnerable and kind of figuring it out, right? People like me can. So it totally made sense. I was like, whoa, okay, so low vitamin D, you're in the hospital. African Americans are having a very hard time with this. Vitamin D is very, very important. And how long did it take for the media to say that we should probably take a vitamin D supplement? Have they even said it mainstream? I'm not sure. But
not that I've heard. They haven't talked about one vitamin since the beginning of this. And that's been one of my frustrations with the media is shot, 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 shot. Nothing about exercise, nothing about eating right, nothing about taking vitamins, nothing about preventative, shot, 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 shot. And so in my brain, I'm thinking, that's weird. Like, I'm just thinking, why is the shot that's an experiment, like being pushed so freaking hard, and they're silencing every other doctor that's trying to say, get your preventatives in, go exercise, be outside, take your vitamins. Nope, we can't hear them. And
Right.
so my red flag, like, and I'm not even a scientist, right? And that's why I like having you on the program, because God's, I love how God divides every single person, and your expertise and what you love is like digging into the science. And I'm like, I don't understand the science. So someone like you is like explaining it in a way someone like me could totally understand and be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And so when, Dr. Cole was explaining how like you go outside and it dies, it's someone like me, I'm like, okay, I get that.
Right.
Maybe that's not the science behind it, but he's making it in a way someone like me could understand. Like, okay, so being outside is a great place for me to go.
Right.
So continue. Like, I'm just really proud of you for like this critical thinking. I want my listeners, I want my viewers to critically think. That's
Yes.
my most important thing I want them to get out of every program I do. Start like, look at the thing, and if there's something inside that makes you go, explore that.
Right.
Continue. Sorry,
And
doctor.
you can, it's fine. You can bring that all the way back to how we learn, how we're taught in from primary school all the way to say graduate school. And we're taught to regurgitate information. We aren't taught to critically appraise and think about something. We're taught that if somebody of authority tells you something, you go with that. That person is an authority figure. And so a part of me is that way. I'm an introvert. I'm eager to please. I'm also very analytical at times. And so, for a long time, that was my mentality too. It before nursing, definitely, it was like, oh, so and so said to that this needs to be done, and I know nothing about that, so then do it. And we need to move away from, because authority figure says something means it's true and they have your best interest at heart. Again, with avocation, that's not always true, and we're seeing that right now. That's not always true. So it's not that you need to be a full-on conspiracy theorist, because that's not it either, and I don't even like the term conspiracy theorist.
I don't
You
either.
need to be a critical thinker. Period. Just question it. Question it and start looking at things. There's 150 probably million memes about moms who go on the internet and research, especially in the anti-vaxxer movement. They love to make fun of moms who say they've done research. That's really not fair. That to say that they are not researching something, they're reading every little possible thing that they can. Is it always a credible source? Probably not. You know what I mean? But you've got to at least give them credit and not demean them for questioning whatever it may be, the science or the authority figures or whatever it may be. Because so many moms found out or knew for a fact that something hurt their child, whether it be vaccines or food or something else, So don't demean that type of critical thinking and questioning. That's what we need. We need to get back to that, like really quickly. So that plays a big part into advocacy. I know you wanted to talk about patient advocacy, and as
But before we go into, I want to touch on, because we're going into therapeutics, what is already available. So, what was available to us was vitamin D. Zinc was
right.
another one that's really important. No one talked about that. Dr. Stella was great and explained how zinc works, is that if you get something that opens up the cell, the zinc can go right in and kill it, kill whatever is in that cell. Now,
It
that would have
inhibits
been really
replication.
important for all of us to have known that information instead of shot, 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 shot. Now, maybe people would have been like, well, let me just do this instead of getting the shot. There's people that are totally scared of needles, for one. And I think what we forgot is there are people that are petrified of germs, And I can't even imagine the living hell they're living in the last 2 years when it's been nothing but germs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And those poor people who were terrified of germs have been probably gone crazy because the biggest fear is their reality right now that everywhere they go, they can get sick. And that's the other thing that I didn't like about, and my critical thinking started coming. Why do we always have to separate? Why are we separating people? Why are we separating the well? Why can't the well get together? Why is it everybody's separated? No one can talk to each other. And when I think of those things, even back in, there was a book written by Aristotle, I want to say, and he wrote the book on politics. And one way that a political leader turns into tyranny is when he wants to separate people. Because when you bring people together, you have the marketplace of ideas. And you could be like, something like that just doesn't sit right with me. What do you think about this? And that's where momentum goes to where we can uncover some things. We can learn about things. We can fix problem solve that way. But we were also meant to be social creatures. And so separating us also played a mental game with us. And people started getting really depressed because we are social creatures, by and large, most of us. I mean, I would even think that introverts at some point want to be around people, right? I mean, I would think.
Depends. Depends on the person and the introvert. But you're right, because, and if you think about how powerful the internet is, it's surprising we still have it. And somebody's going to hear that and be like, oh shoot, let's take their weapon away. But reality is the internet, while it's being used to weaponize the COVID and all of that and the vaccine, it's also being used by people who want this multidisciplinary, and that's what we call it in healthcare, but same idea, multidisciplinary view of things, viewpoints, going on a Telegram channel that's full of pilots, nurses, doctors, whatever it may be, and having this more holistic view of what they're seeing and interpreting, right? And what we interpret is not always true, but sometimes it can make us think, oh, wow, I didn't even think of that point of view on this topic. And that's where I think a lot of our power lies, to be honest.
I agree. And so here we have, okay, vitamin D at our disposal, zinc at our disposal. And then the president of the United States starts talking about hydroxychloroquine, and then bam, the hammer hits. No, we can't talk about that. Or and ivermectin, God forbid, because now that's a horse thing. We can't be giving people horse medicine. I mean, let's cut that down. I mean, as soon as the president started talking about his treatment plans, as soon as he starts bringing hydroxychloroquine and all these other things, he got shut down immediately. No, we can't talk about that because shot. That's all we can talk about.
So, in order to get an emergency use authorization for a vaccine or a therapeutic, you have to prove that there are no other therapeutics already available that help with whatever it is you're trying to beat. And if at that point, when President Trump was talking about that was before the vaccine was developed enough to be released, right? And they hadn't even requested an EUA yet, right? So they had to stop that. And this isn't a conspiracy. This is the law. These are laws. That is why that ha they had to rail against that, because if they found out that hydroxychloroquine, and I don't think he talked about ivermectin in
No, but
that
he
sense,
did. I
but
hydroxychloroquine.
right, if they found that that worked, then they would not have been able to be granted an emergency use authorization for an mRNA vaccine.
Correct, but if going back to patents, you can prove that this whole thing with patents has been in the works for some time. And so when he comes out and says hydroxychloroquine, then they just shut it down, and it wasn't even a, and then they started making fun. There should have been some discussion about that, but the fact is they wanted to push this shot so badly that even the idea couldn't even be in the public square to talk about. It got shut down like that. And I just think that to me at that moment was like a light bulb. I'm like, why is that idea just shut down? That this is like, again, so I, you start putting these like these things that you start seeing start popping up, and you're like, why is that shut down now? Why,
So it's a piece to the puzzle, and
right.
then when you have the whole puzzle together, you can finally see what's going on, right? So the reason why it was easy to shut down hydroxychloroquine, not only because there weren't any studies for that specific treatment, but because we have the FDA, right? So it's FDA approved, but it's unapproved for that purpose. So therefore you need studies, and so they could just put it off and say, oh, well, we'll study it. And then we can talk about the studies on that later. But the point here is, to me, as a nurse scientist, if you have a drug that is proven, ivermectin has been, I think, 60 years or something like that, very long time, whatever it may be, has been on the market. We know the side effect profile, period, right? We know at what threshold it can hurt somebody. We know it is a proven treatment or therapy that we know will not harm a human. Okay. That doesn't mean that it's going to work on COVID, right? But we know that it won't harm somebody. And that is where, like with hydroxychloroquine, there were people with lupus coming out saying, I take this drug every day. And it would be interesting to find out how many people with lupus had a very severe case of coronavirus. That would be interesting. And it might be out there and it might never be out there. But so there were people coming forward saying, I take it for rheumatoid arthritis and I have very few side effects. It's very safe, blah, blah, blah. But again, because they have those rules saying that if just because it's FDA approved doesn't mean you can use it for that purpose. It's called an off-label use. It then has to be studied first. And that's how easy it was to shut it down because of our own rules and our own safety rules at that.
Yeah, I know. I
And
get that part. I do, but then like it's just like as I've been studying this more and more and unfolding, and it's just like, okay, so this isn't just something that just popped up. This is something that's kind of been in the works. The fact that even it was proven with the Congress that it was gain of function research, stuff that's been going on for a long time. Paid for by you and I, which is very frustrating to me. I'm like, why are we funding like biological weapons? Like, that makes me mad. And then it got used against us, and it's hurt me, and it's hurt other people, and it's hurt in different ways. So we are separated from our loved ones, and we can't go see them. And so my best friend died last year of breast cancer, but they put her on the COVID floor. Because we have this PCR test that is faulty, and we have learned that now. I've learned now that the creator of this PCR test said it's not used for diagnostic purposes, yet they were using it for diagnostic purposes. And so a lot of people were getting false positives from it. First of all, they spend it too much, over 35 up to 40, and everyone was getting positives. It picks up dead viruses, it picks up all kinds of stuff, and says it is positive. That's why the creator of the PCR test said, don't use it for diagnostic purposes, but that's what they use it for. So she would get a negative and then a positive and then a negative and a positive. And so they just put her on the COVID floor. So now we can't go see her. And that's when I started getting involved in everything and wondering, like, why can't I go see my dying friend? She's not dying from COVID, she's dying from breast cancer. I want to be by her side. And I
right.
started reaching out to legislatures and the county board of supervisors. Can you make this rule change? Because I want to go see my friend who's stuck on the COVID floor without COVID. She has breast cancer. And it was awful. And so, especially in the beginning of COVID, you had loved ones couldn't be there with their dying loved ones. You had to do it over the phone, you had to do it on a tablet, and it's just not the same as holding someone's hand. And even fast forward to this year, COVID rules stopped me from being able to see my dad the last week of his life, and he did not die from COVID. He died because he had a liver transplant, he had no immune system, and then he got some fungus or bacteria that ate his heart valve, and he died from that. That's what he died from. But because of COVID rules, I couldn't go see him the last week of his life. He had one visitor. He was stuck in the ER for 2 days, only one visitor allowed. And then my sister wanted to go see him one day, and then my uncle saw him one day. And so I tried to go see my dad, and they wouldn't let me. And And so I've had two loved ones who didn't die from COVID, but I was prevented from seeing them. And it's hard to get that closure. And so I get angry with these COVID rules because we could have had preventative medication. We could have. Now we have learned that ivermectin hydroxychloroquine does work now that we fast forward. At the time, like you said, doctor, you're correct. Off-label, they need to do studies on it. You're absolutely correct. But now we have this protocol going in the hospital where they're using remdesivir, and it failed the Ebola study. They had to take it down because it was killing a significant amount of people. And I read that Ebola study because it was shutting down organs. And that's an, as far as I understand, it's still an EUA. I don't think it got fully approved yet, and it might have, but last I checked, it was still an EUA, and they're giving that to patients. And I think attorney Thomas Renz, I think he said in his presentation, 25% of people who go in with this protocol are dying from this protocol, because it shut down your kidneys, and then they give you this breast suppressant. I can't remember the name of it. And then naturally, you go to the hospital, you get the IV. So now you can't. I used to be a dialysis tech, so I understand how the kidney thing works. And it doesn't take long when you sign off after you don't get your dialysis. It doesn't take long before you pass. And so they're pumping you full of fluid. You can't get rid of it because you don't have kidneys, and then you can't breathe. And then that's it. And that's 25% of people on this protocol are dying. And George Soros patented remdesivir. And yet when doctors want to give ivermectin, they're threatened with their medical license. I'm just like, what the heck? So now that we talked about that, let's say my brother, sister, mother, father is now in the COVID floor, separated from me. How do I fight for them? How do I advocate for them? Because when I'm sitting right next to them in the hospital, it's so much easier to be face to face with a medical professional saying, "Hey, I need this. No, I don't want to do this." It's easier. But
Right.
when you're only bound by a phone, and it's at their will if they can take the phone call or not, or call you back. And then when you do, what do you say to these medical professionals to try and help your loved one in the hospital?
So in the most extreme form, we should all have a medical power of attorney. We should all have somebody who we trust, who knows what our wishes are, who knows enough about whatever protocol or whatever. That would be the ultimate kind of would be the best, because the patient is not, if you have a medical power of attorney, the patient doesn't get to make their own decisions. The medical power of attorney does, meaning the people, the nurses, the doctors who prescribe a certain treatment or therapy has to run it through the medical power of attorney. Does that make sense? So while you're not going to be there in person, you will be in contact, because then you're going to know everything that's going on, versus the we've been too busy to call you. I know that you're interested in what's going on with your father, blah, blah, blah. For me, my father got COVID and was very, very stubborn, stayed home until he almost died type of thing. And he has a long history of things, autoimmune disease is what would have taken him out, what would have really been why the COVID was so bad for him, and that was the autoimmune response and the inflammatory response in his lungs. So when I finally forced him to go, I told him, "You're going to the Mayo, and I don't want you to say a word until they read this letter." And I wrote out every single thing about how his situation transpired, where, when he had his tests, when all of what he's taken for medications, what his history is. And I said, "You don't tell them, you say, I'm not talking to anyone until you read this letter," because they wouldn't let me go with him. Right.
Okay, so
So that's
I
how long
love
I
that
waited
idea.
for.
So my listeners can grab a hold of that. So in this letter, I want them to really know in this letter, it was his medical history, the
So it was.
medication he's on.
It was it, he wasn't on any medication,
Okay.
but so it was his medical history, and that was all the times he's had pneumonia. That was all the times he gets seasonal bronchitis. My father had a job where he was breathing in asbestos and things like that. He's at very high risk for lung issues because of his career, and he's older. He's in his 60s. So, And so I start with his health history. He's got autoimmune. He's got these lung issues. He's got this and that. He's not taking any medications because he's a relatively healthy man. However, he has these autoimmune things that have come up. And so here we are with that, right? Mm-hmm. So then I moved on into the history, the current illness, right? And that's the COVID. It started on this day, did this, been taking Tylenol, been taking whatever. Every single thing that he did, to include oxygen saturations, to include when he went to another hospital and they said, yeah, you have COVID, but there's nothing we can do. And they sent him home to die. They gave him nothing. So
is that normal in the medical profession, in the medical world? Is that normal?
No, not even for, say, the flu, right? So say for the flu, you go in, you're really sick. You're like, oh man, I don't think I can beat this time. Or whatever. If you're past the 72 hours, then we know that the antivirals have very little or no effect on the flu when it comes to the flu antivirals, but they're going to give you other things to help you, depending on your symptoms, inhalers, steroids, things like that to keep down inflammation, all of that. Had my father been given steroids, heavy duty steroids, the day that he went in and they told him, yeah, you've got COVID and there's nothing we can do, knowing that he had an autoimmune disorder, knowing that the inflammation in his lungs is more than likely from his own immune system, right? Had they given him high dose steroids, then even just one dose of dexamethasone while he was there, he probably wouldn't have had to go back. But instead, he ended up going back and almost dying. So at that point, I said, I'm not going to trust anybody and I don't want you to trust anybody. So take this letter and tell them you will not accept any treatment and you will not speak to them until they've read it and they've recognized and then start having a conversation with you about what I wrote in this. And I wrote even all the way down to he needs steroids. He needs, you know, I went all the way. And my dad said, you know, he goes, I'm glad that I have you, but it's like, oh, my daughter's a nurse and she has a doctorate. So here, read this. And he's like, you know, they don't have to take that seriously, but I feel like you're a bulldozer and they have no choice. And I'm like, I made them have no choice. You won't talk to them until, you know, they read that and recognize. And it's not recognize my authority or anything like that. But listen, if anybody knows my father's history, it's me. Mm-hmm. And that's the point of advocation in that realm, is that you want the person who knows the most about that person. And if that person can't speak for themselves, whether it be medical terms, health literacy or whatever, you want somebody who knows them the most. I'm going to advocate obviously better for my father than somebody who has no vested interest in him, or somebody who can only read his history from whatever records the Mayo or whoever might have. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So my father did get remdesivir. And I, after the fact, when I read about it at that point, there was some talk about kidney stuff. And this was a while ago, but I said, make sure that you let them know you only have one kidney, because he had
how scary.
He donated a kidney to my stepmother.
Oh, so scary. So
he had one kidney and he had remdesivir. And so we're kind of lucky I feel like very, very lucky.
You're very lucky.
That didn't cause damage to that one kidney that he does have. But so he made it out. I'm not going to say that he's 100%. He's not. He doesn't feel awesome since having been admitted for COVID. But he's alive and, you know, retired. He's been retired. So it's not like he has to go to work and really suffer through this. But he does have some leftover residual issues with it. So as far as advocating, that's how I did it when I knew I couldn't be there. But not everybody knows that they can do that. You know what I mean? And not everybody knows what is pertinent, what is important in a medical history, right? What do they really need to know that's going to be important for their care? And I'm lucky that I know that because I'm a nurse, but not everybody does. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So in those cases, that's when you really hope that the nurse who's taking care of your loved one is a strong advocate. And there's a lot about patient advocacy that's multifaceted. Okay. So when we advocate for a patient says, So first of all, nurses are natural advocates. It's a part of our job. It's part of our code of ethics for nurses. I think it's the third provision. We are to keep patients safe, promote their protect their rights, right?
You are with the patient more than the doctors with the patient.
Yes.
So honestly, like you, to me, I've always believed this. I feel like the nurses know more about me than the doctor does because you spend more time. If I'm in the hospital, you're the one spending more time with me. You're the one checking on me. We're talking. We're having conversations.
Right.
You've been monitoring my vitals. Like I feel like you would know more about me, which would make you a great advocate. But right.
So that's
just
the
in
one
case.
Part. That's like, one part of advocating. Mm-hmm. That's advocating for the care that your patient is getting specific to their health needs. Right. And what you've seen or what the nurse has seen transpire during their time at the hospital. That's one part of it. Another part is advocating for a patient's choice. OK, so when a patient and I can give you we'll try to do an easy example. A patient, a Jehovah's Witness. That's an easy one. They do not take blood or human products. Right. Because they believe. I don't know exactly what they believe because I'm not a Jehovah's Witness, but I know that they believe it taints themselves and that's so they don't do that. And this is a true story. I had a patient, I was a student at the time, and I knew she was a Jehovah's Witness. She was in the hospital and very sick, and I can't remember exactly what she was sick with, but it was a blood disorder, whether it be where she made them, bone marrow, whatever, she was having blood issues. So she's very, very anemic, very sick, okay? But she wouldn't take blood. So as a natural advocate, I'm a natural advocate personality wise before being a nurse. So there's that part too, but they were giving her, of course, now I'm going to have a,
of course, always happens to me too. Okay. You're in good company.
They were giving her the protein, that's in your blood. Okay. Mm. It's, and I'm going to think of it later, or I'm going to think about it all day to try to think of it. this is ridiculous. I hate it when this happens. But anyway, so it's a blood component.
Okay.
Albumin. There you go. It's like, woo, brain finally working. So albumin is a blood product. When we give albumin, so I didn't know this as a student. So she was my patient. We're going to give her albumin, go have her sign this. And I'm like, okay, so I read it and it's a blood product release or liability or consent. And I was like, we're giving her a blood product. And they're like, well, no, it's not blood. It's a component of the blood, but it's not blood. And I think I'd have to look it up, whether it's 100% synthetic or if we actually do use some of the parts from other people's blood in this. And that is why we have to use those consents. I don't know. Probably. That's probably why. So I said, but she's a Jehovah's Witness. And instantly I turned into this advocate and I was like, she doesn't want this. This is not what she wants. However, she's going to die if we don't do something. So what do you do in that situation? Okay, so this is the part of advocacy where a nurse has to be strong and stand up against their superior. And that's the hardest part of advocacy in all of it. It's not so much that you're helping express what the patient told you. It's that you have to stand up against somebody who is your superior, mm-hmm. right? And maybe escalated as far as past that doctor, which, you know, can really cause friction in relationships.
Yeah, of course.
With doctors all the time. And that's where nurses are the weakest. And it isn't that I'm saying nurses are weak and they won't stand up.
Right.
That is a very hard thing to do. Especially mm-hmm. when you know your patient's wrong,
mm-hmm. okay?
Because when it comes to advocating like that, a patient might say no to a treatment that you know in your heart mm-hmm. and your career and all of the science mm-hmm. you've read, you know they need it and you know it's safe and you know that they, right? So there's only so much education that you can give that patient to try to change their mind. And that is where I really want to stress that there is absolutely and should never be bias and manipulation in patient advocacy. Okay. And this is one of the things that I'm very passionate about, because if you were to right now do a Google search on how do I advocate for my family member who doesn't want the vaccine, the corona vaccine or the COVID vaccine, you're going to get pages that tell you how to persuade them to take it versus how do I help them say no? How do I, if that's what they
And
want?
going back to, religious rights, Project Veritas blew the lid on it that they're using aborted fetal cell, and it wasn't clear if it's actually in the shot itself or if they're just using it to test. But regardless, like for a lot of people, especially in the Christian faith, that goes against their belief system. And the idea of using an aborted baby just for a lot of believers is just, it's really, really awful. And it goes against their religious belief. So that's one reason why so many people are having a tough time with that shot. But what have you learned about the shot?
So let me talk about that for a second because there's something a lot deeper with fetal cells than what everybody, every nurse that has a strong science background, right? We so there's different levels of nurses. There's a brand new nurse, there's an ADN nurse, there's a there okay, once you become quote unquote an expert as a nurse, which takes 5 to 10 years, okay, as a nurse, all of us know that vaccines are tested on fetal cells. We all know this. This is not a secret. This has never been a secret. Okay. So when this came out, bombshell Project Veritas, while I agree it's a bombshell because
Most
so
of us
many
didn't
people
know.
don't know that almost all of our vaccines are tested that way. Okay. Almost all of them are. So if you break that kind of news to a huge Christian population or a huge religious Muslim even populations, you're going to end up with potentially people who refuse all vaccines, right? Not just mRNA vaccines that also have their own thing about religion, in my opinion. But all vaccines, everyone that's been tested on fetal cells. Does that make sense? So it doesn't have to go in on the ingredient label. They aren't wrong with that, but to hide the fact that if somebody asks them, was this tested on aborted fetal cells, and to intentionally manipulate and hide that, that's where they're wrong. It's not that they're wrong that it wasn't on the ingredient list. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it
You're
totally makes
not being
sense.
injected with fetal cells. You're not.
As a
Period.
mom and an infertility survivor, that kind of stuff makes me cry.
Right. Right.
Because I would have done anything to, when I was trying to have children and I couldn't, and I kept miscarrying and miscarrying and miscarrying. If I could have stopped a woman from doing that, so I could have had her baby. I mean, that like it just hit such a personal string with me. And then on top of my religious beliefs, it's like, that was a bombshell to me because I didn't know. And if
Right,
I knew, I might have made different choices.
which is
And
why
you
they
might
wanted
not have
to keep
agreed
it
with it
secret.
or disagreed, but my inner being, like everything inside of me, would say, that's just wrong. That's wrong for me to participate in that. And so that bombshell came, and I'm like, oh man. So,
Right.
continue, sorry. This is my stand. It's like, I want to save all the babies in the world because there's women like me that want to be a mom so bad and having a really hard time. And if they could have saved that baby and that mom could have had her life, without having children, and this other woman could have fulfilled that inner desire. I mean, that's kind of where I stand with abortion, like.
And that's why that is why that part right there, the way your imagination, and it's not imagination, but the way that you're able to visualize these things and compartmentalize and really think about what abortion really is. There's a big part of the population that have been I don't want to say brainwashed, but brainwashed to believe that it's a clump of cells. Have you heard that before? Right. So there was legislation somewhere that said that any abortion over 8 weeks, some I think it was 8 weeks, 12 weeks, They had to have an ultrasound. It was either presented, it never got passed because there's a reason why. An 11-week-old baby on
has a heartbeat
is so cute. No, it has more than a heartbeat. 11 weeks has arm buds. It has.
Oh, yeah. Clothes. Oh, it for has, sure.
It's the cutest little thing.
Yeah.
I shouldn't admit this, but I would peek in on my son when, because I was a labor and delivery nurse when I was pregnant, and I would peek in on him with our ultrasound all the time and be like,
oh, I wish I could have done that with mine. If I was in your situation, I'd be in there all the time. Like, yeah. Oh,
it's cute because at 11 weeks, they're small enough that their whole body fits on the ultrasound image versus where when you're 20 weeks, you see, oh, here's the head, here's the foot, here's the, you know what I mean? So they're much cuter when they're younger, in my mm-hmm. opinion, even though they still look a little alien-like. If, you know, if they were to come out or you had a miscarriage or something like that, they're not going to look cute like you would think.
Right.
But that's a big part of, I feel like, the whole abortion thing is that we've allowed this, I don't know if I should use this word, bastardization of the idea of what a fetus is.
You're right. I would agree with that.
Yeah. So that part, and this is just an extension of that by saying, well, we test on fetal cells. It's just their kidney cells or whatever. And it's not in the vaccine. So we don't need to really disclose that. No, you really do need to disclose that. You really do. Because we also we should be having a conversation about who's profiting on abortions.
Mm-hmm.
There's more profit than just
not only that, but it's abortion. Come out this year about fresh but never frozen babies that they're using for experiments. And this is off topic, but I want people to dig in, critical thinking, look into that, fresh but never frozen babies that they have been experimenting on. So just, I want people to know that that is out there. It's been exposed this year. And I think it's important that we know about it. But I'm sorry, continue with what you were saying.
I kind of completed that thought and forgot where.
Oh, okay. My ADHD. What else? What about the shot? What else about the shot that you know about that you'd want to share with our audience if you know any more about the shot?
So, we need transparency. That's the problem for me is transparency. I'm not anti-science. I am absolutely. I'm not anti-vaccine to the point. I take vaccines that I know I need to protect my patients. However, I weigh the risk and benefit as well. For me, I never wanted to take the flu shot, and it's because the efficacy of the flu shot is, and I don't feel like I should have to inject that into my body to quote unquote protect my patients.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had two flu shots in my life. Both were forced on me. And that was towards when I was moving on to a different part of my career. And so I will never get another flu shot because
I
didn't want them in the first place. And this is pre-coronavirus. This is pre-COVID. So I feel like we need to be able to definitely have our medical decision-making is our own. Like we need to be able to have that. But also weigh the risk and benefit for us. I'm young. I've never had the flu that I know of, not anything that made me go to the doctor and be tested and come positive. So that's not to say that I wouldn't, and it's not to say that I wouldn't die, but I know that risk and I'm accepting that risk. Okay. So that's why I feel like when it comes to forcing vaccines, mandating anything, especially vaccines, but mandating anything broadly over everybody, that's not how medicine works. We don't do that in the hospital with any diagnosis right now. And when we do, it's called evidence-based practice, and we have strict standards and guidelines for certain things that over many, many years we've learned this is what we have to do. For example, congestive heart failure. We know fluid restriction. We know, and we need diuretics. We know that these are the things for every single person, but you know, we know that because many, many years and science that is irrefutable. That's why we have those strict protocols or evidence-based practice is what we call. In order to set up a guideline, evidence-based practice, we need lots of evidence, lots of good evidence, and we grade the evidence. This is something that people, you know, I don't expect people who don't have a doctorate to understand that when we get, when the PhDs and the scientists of the world release this document of their evidence, right, their research, there's this thing called a way to grade it. And that is to go through it and really break it down and make sure it's quality evidence. Because if we don't have quality evidence, we cannot then apply it to evidence-based practice. It has to be quality or it won't make it. And this is with the magnet movement of hospitals and things like that. Again, we don't need to get into that. But the point is, in order to make a guideline, we have to have a lot of really good evidence. So to mandate something and basically say, this is the gold standard and guideline, we need a lot of evidence. And we don't have that.
Because typically the vaccines take 10 years to study, approximately 10 years. That's some of the research I've seen.
If you look back historically on some of the other vaccines that have come and gone that have been or failed vaccines, you can find out that we saw problems with it within about 5 years, roughly. And it depends on, there's so many factors. All humans are very different. We have different races. We have different ethnicities, right? Which ethnicities do play a part in some of the ways that mm-hmm. people express sickness. Sure. So to blanket mandate this vaccine, number one, we shouldn't blanket anything like that. And we don't with other vaccines, do we? We don't. So if somebody young and healthy has never been sick from the flu, doesn't want the flu vaccine, you don't have to have the flu vaccine. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We've been mandating it in hospitals. And that's something that I, again, was the slippery slope mm-hmm. That started. But outside of that, we don't do this. We just don't do this. Okay. And the slippery slope. That recently happened where there was no religious exemption for me. And that's how I always didn't get the flu shot was because I really don't agree with it. It is against my beliefs. And so that's how I did not. But then those last 2 years I had to because they got rid of the religious exemption. Mm-hmm. So it was lose your job or take it. And so with these vaccines, I want to make something very clear. This is the first widely used mRNA vaccine. This is not a normal vaccine. It is not anything except for the Johnson & Johnson, which is a vector. These mRNA vaccines, this technology is so new, and it might not look new if you look up mRNA vaccine mm-hmm. technology. It was created a while ago, but this is the first time in a broad population that we're using them. And that's scary. That part is scary. Is it going to turn you into a GMO and ruin your DNA? Probably not. But does it enter your cells and tell your cells how to express something? Yes, it does. That is what an RNA, that is the whole premise behind these, is to get that RNA packet into the cell to tell the cell what to do. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So the cell then makes these antibodies or makes this whatever from that genetic material, RNA material. So that being said, we can broadly say with a vector type vaccine, we can broadly say what we know will be the side effects, right? What in the long run could happen. With these mRNAs, we don't. We really don't know. And some of the things that I'm reading from people that are just very educated, very with it, very smart, I wouldn't call them conspiracy minded. The things that they're coming out with and are very concerned about should concern people. We should be talking about this, because even one of the creators of the mRNA vaccine doesn't advocate for the use of it like this. And he doesn't villainize it to say that it will never have a purpose, but he does say we don't know enough yet to be using it in this type of broad spectrum on the entire population. I know there's a lot of theories out there. I know a lot of people want to talk about mass depopulation. They want to talk about all these things. But just from a science-minded point, we just don't know enough about this technology and haven't used it enough, even in small scale, to be able to use it this way.
What we do know is we can look at the VAERS report and we can compare that to the other shots, the other vaccines, And we've had significant reactions to this one versus all the other ones together. So that's where my critical thinking cap goes on and be like, maybe I shouldn't put this in my body because, whoa, we have like 15,000 deaths reported in the bears. And then there's like thousands or millions, I have to go back and look, of adverse events that happened. And then young people with
Myocarditis.
myocarditis. It's like, okay.
And we know that VAERS is a very small snapshot.
Yes,
It's
it's
an
like 1%.
underrepresented,
It's
yes.
1% of all the adverse reports that actually get reported is 1%. So it's very low, which means potentially that's a much higher number. So those are things you need to think about when you decide to roll up your sleeve. I think it should be your choice. I don't think it should be forced on you. I'm upset that that's a reality going on right now. And I want to advocate for people who don't want to take it. They shouldn't have to lose their jobs over it.
Well, and that's something too, threatening people's livelihoods. You've got the a certain population politically that is just like, mandates work. Can't you see when we mandated it, our vaccination, whatever, increased. You can't use coercion and manipulation as your tool to, and then say it works. Like we know that the mafia saying they're going to kill you if you don't do something works. So if you're going to take away somebody's livelihood, their job, their money, and everything, of course they're going to sign on because they have no choice.
Which
They don't
makes
have a
me
choice.
wonder, that's where my critical thinking comes on. Like, why do you have to threaten my job for me to get the shot? And how come you're willing to close down hospitals and let nurses and doctors walk out? Like, then that makes me think, is there really, still a problem if you're gonna willing to let the medical professionals leave because they don't want to get the shot? These are all the things you need to be thinking, not just mainstream media stuff. Like, think for yourself. Like, why is this okay if we are really in this problem?
And think about this. This is something that just drives me absolutely insane. If you say that you don't want a mandate, then you're instantly a Trumpian. You must be for Trump. And this is something that is very, very sick, and it needs to stop. The idea that it's all political and everyone who wants the vaccine is somehow a Biden, and everyone who doesn't want it is a Trumpian. Here's the thing. If Trump told me to get the vaccine, and he has, I'd say no, thank you.
Me too.
If Biden told me to get the vaccine in an incoherent, creepy voice, I'd say no, thank you. And I might throw in a let's go, Brandon. You know what I mean?
Let's
But
go, Brandon. I love you so much right now.
the point is, it is our choice in this. And there is no legal precedent set for mandating of a vaccine, whether it be pandemic or not. There's no precedent to use this. And I want people to understand that the more of us that say absolutely not, and I will very much exit the workforce. I will very much stop what it is that I do, because let's just face it, we're not elites. We're the worker bees, okay? We're the ones that make sure that this country is running. We are, okay? And in the moment that we say this is we're done, then everything stops. And I think you're gonna see some very spicy things when it comes to the movement of all of the containers that are sitting on ships and sitting in port containers. The ports are full. And why is that? Why are we not? You might want to start appreciating the workers like truck drivers who are moving all of that stuff
Yes, I agree.
for you, not to mention the dock workers and the people that are working very hard to get stuff unloaded and things like that. But remember, we are the reason why things work.
That's
It's
right.
not the policies, it's not the president, it's not the representatives. Really, I feel like they're just playing games, and that's that. We are what makes things work. And when you've got hospitals that are closing down, say, labor and delivery units, they can't even deliver babies because the nurses said, nah, I'm not going to take this vaccine. Guess what? We're going to start seeing bad things happen. And I don't want to get to that. And I'm not advocating for nurses or
No,
anyone
of course
in
not.
the healthcare field not to do But do advocate for yourself. Hey, I'm showing up. I'm here. I did not quit my job. And I want to do what I need to do to help people. And I've been doing it for the last XYZ amount of years. And they're being forced to leave. That's not, at least you're advocating to still do what you're supposed to do, right? I don't think any of us should be forced, especially something that's still under an EUA, something that we don't have the completed studies on, something that even if we had the completed studies, see, I'm not moving the goalpost here. Even if we had, it was FDA approved, which it's not, even if it was,
it should still be your choice.
It's still a choice. We should never be mandated anything like this.
And I think if anyone understands that concept, nurses understand that concept, because it, like you said before, it was always what the patient wanted. If the patient absolutely did not want this, no matter what, you had to respect that. Even though it hurt your heart, you had to respect that. Thank you, Dr. Michaud, for coming on the program.
Welcome.
I really think you were very helpful to all of us to understand, you know, all the stuff COVID,
yes.
especially from a nursing perspective. I really think that's great. Guys, make sure you check the link below. There's a video I want you to see. I want to help you because, hey, if you're, imagine being retired, okay? And you're living life and it's been great. And it's been like 8 years retirement. You've traveled the world. You're doing your bucket list. And then you realize, oh, shoot, I can't live anymore because I ran out of money. I want you to watch the video. I don't want that to be you. I want to help you out. Remember, mypillow.com, promo code Amber, save 66% off. You got to get those slippers for Christmas. You're going to love them. Trust me, I love them. I love my slippers. And then, hey, get yourself proactive. Get your COVID bites from Dr. Stella. So go to drstellamd.com, promo code AmberMay, one word, and save money there. Join us on Telegram, AZ Supermoms. Do you have to be a mom to join? Absolutely not. It was just started by supermoms. Everyone's welcome, especially if you love Arizona and especially if you love our country. Please join AZ Supermoms on our Telegram channel. And then essential oils. Love my essential oils. The link is in the description for that. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program. I really appreciate you.
Thank you.